Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Phillips, the Director of the Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University and author of Losing Iraq: Inside the Post-War Reconstruction Fiasco. He has worked as a senior advisor to the United Nations Secretariat and as a foreign affairs expert and senior advisor to the United States Department of State, and has an article at the Huffington Post, Putin's Calculus in Ukraine. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Phillips.
Thank you very much, Ian.
And what is Putin's calculus? Because we had I had a very alarming conversation yesterday with the defense analyst in Moscow, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, who indicated he thought that Putin was behaving recklessly in this whole misadventure. And if he goes deeper into Ukraine, it could blow up in his face and cause untold destruction and mayhem and death and, name it. So what do you think Putin's calculus is?
It's true that he's acting recklessly. He's delusional at times, but he is fundamentally cold and calculating. And Vladimir Putin has a plan. He wants to restore Russia's control in parts of the former Soviet Union. And he's starting in Crimea. He's made it clear that the greatest tragedy of the 20th century was the demise of the Soviet Union. So ethnic Russian areas in the so-called near abroad right now are fair game to Russia and to Putin.
Well, but does this mean he's going to intervene further militarily in Ukraine?
He could very well. There's a Russian belt in between Donetsk and Kharkiv. You know, going into Crimea, where they already had a base agreement, is one thing. But if he does what the Russian Duma has authorized him to do, which is to extend Russia's military deeper into the country, then you're likely to see a real military confrontation between Ukraine and Russia.
And that's what Felgenhauer was telling me yesterday, that that could end up a massive disaster, worse than the conflagrations we're seeing in Syria and other parts of the world.
I mean, so far in Kiev, they've been restrained in their actions. But if Russia comes in to tries to take territory beyond Crimea, there will be a lot of pressure on this interim government to demonstrate a military response. You know, they're likely to get wiped in the battlefield because Russia's forces are so much greater and they spend so much more money than Ukraine does. Now, how does the international community respond if Russia decides that it wants to seize all of the ethnic Russian territories, and there is a live fire exchange between Ukraine and Russia over those lands?
So that would lead me to believe that, given what you said about Putin, that he's cold and calculating, that he's not going to go that far.
If he thinks he can get away with it, he will go that far. And we also need to put this in a bigger context. I mean, what's the ultimate end game here for Vladimir Putin? Is it simply Crimea? Is it the ethnic Russian territories in Ukraine? Is he trying to embarrass the United States and President Obama? And what about other countries in the former Soviet Union where there are ethnic Russian populations, like Moldova and Georgia and the Baltic states? I mean, unless you draw a line and you keep Putin and Russia from aggressing further into Ukraine, what's going to stop them from continuing their aggression and trying to take other territories?
Well, apparently there were concerns expressed by the Russian-speaking Angela Merkel after a long phone conversation with the German-speaking Vladimir Putin that the Russian leader is in his own world, believing that Russia's problems with Ukraine are caused by CIA and U.S. meddling, not a rejection of Russia's corrupt and criminal model of governance personified by the deposed Yanukovych family regime. And that being the case, then why did Secretary of State Kerry, why is he flying into Kiev? You don't want to increase Putin's paranoia. He should be flying into Moscow, shouldn't he?
And Putin is paranoid. He thinks this whole thing is a Western conspiracy and that the anti-Russian opposition is sponsored and backed by U.S. and Western intelligence. And what's important right now is to just lower the temperature, try to stabilize the situation, keep things from escalating. Tactically, to go to Kiev first sends a signal of strong support to Ukraine, but we have an important bilateral relationship with Russia, and if we want them to stand down, we have to make very clear what the red lines are and then what the costs are going to be. So going to Moscow and having a sit-down with Russian officials and letting them know what the implications will be to this action, it's very important for the United States.
But my understanding is that Putin has almost disdain for Obama, whether he thinks Obama is weak because he sort of ran rings around him over Syria, or it's possible that it's even tinged with a certain amount of racism. What's your understanding of Putin's attitude to Obama?
Whenever they've met, the body language has been pretty clear. Putin looks like a schoolboy in the back of the classroom. He really has no interest in an engagement with Obama. So I think that there's a personal disdain. Also, there's a tinge of racism there. And it's widely known that African exchange students in Moscow get rounded up and beaten by skinheads. There's no love between Russians and Africans or African Americans. So part of Putin's contempt for President Obama is also the fact of President Obama's race.
Well, because he's Putin's friend in the Duma, who's also a former, she lit the Olympic torch. She tweeted that racist picture of Obama and his wife. I don't know whether you saw it, holding up a banana.
Yeah, I did see it. It was disgusting, and there was no place for it, and she should have been more than reprimanded. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that kind of attitude is widespread in Russia. And as long as Putin and his circle are allowed to get away with this kind of action in Crimea, they're going to continue to aggress and try to restore Russia's imperial ambitions in what they call the near abroad. It gets really dangerous if Russian forces go into other ethnic Russian parts of Ukraine, because then they're on a roll. And if they're not stopped there, they'll go into Moldova and maybe the Baltic states. And then you've got NATO involved, and there's a real potential for this to turn into a major conflagration.
Again, I'm speaking with David Phillips, the director of the Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University and the author of Liberating Kosovo, Coercive Diplomacy and U.S. Intervention. He's worked as a senior advisor to the United Nations Secretariat and as a foreign affairs expert and senior advisor to the United States Department of State. And he has an article at the Huffington Post, Putin's Calculus in Ukraine. Well, that sounds pretty alarming, and I can't see how... I mean, first of all, when you say he's got getting away with what he's doing in Crimea, it looks like he has gotten away with it, unless, as Pavel Felgenhauer was saying yesterday, somehow the minority Tatars end up, you know, going to guerrilla warfare over the long haul. At this point, he's completely controlled Crimea without firing a shot. And if he goes into Ukraine, as we were saying earlier, there's likely to be a tremendous response from Ukrainians, and that could begin even in the short term. The Russian military could overwhelm the very weak Ukrainian military, but in the long term, you would have a terrible situation. And even polling in Russia itself indicates that the Russian people are dead against the idea of war. They feel very close fraternal ties with the Ukrainians.
Well, let's just be clear that Crimea is part of Ukraine.
Right.
And let's also be clear that Putin is in complete control.
Right.
He's been able to occupy Crimea without firing a shot. The Ukrainian forces there are surrounded. What's the West going to do? It needs to have an economic, a political, and a security response. The government in Kiev is bankrupt. So they need an IMF package to shape up sooner than later. Politically, William Hague went to Kiev today to show support. Kerry will go as well. There's a possibility of bringing Ukrainians to Washington and also developing a democracy assistance package to try to compensate for the democracy deficit that exists in Ukraine. But it's important that this whole conflict not look as though it's between the United States and Russia. It should be between Russia and the international community. And that's where NATO has a very important role to play. It can speed up negotiations around a membership action plan for Ukraine. It can extend air patrols over Ukrainian airspace. It can deploy monitors as a kind of tripwire in the event that Russian troops decide they want to go further than Crimea. The U.S. can send high-level defense officials to look at Ukraine's military capabilities and explore ways that they could be strengthened. So there's a lot that can be done.
Right, but everything that you've – sorry to interrupt, but everything that you've mentioned, David Phillips, in the context of what we talked about earlier with the Secretary of State Kerry showing up in Kiev instead of showing up in Moscow, that we shouldn't be playing into Putin's paranoia, everything that you've just enunciated will add to his paranoia, you know, 10,000-fold. I mean, the idea of NATO, he keeps thinking that this is all about NATO, and NATO expansion into Ukraine is not even on the table, but the idea that NATO would have a plan and start sending planes and advisors and stuff, wouldn't that absolutely, first of all, it would validate all of what Putin is saying and ramp up his paranoia to a dangerous degree?
So it's hard to square the circle. You have to guard against Putin's paranoia, but you also have to show resolve and character in the face of aggression. And the U.S. and NATO are in a position to do that. And let me be very clear. If you don't establish red lines and you don't enumerate specific costs so that when you threaten Putin with some painful action, he knows exactly what to expect, then he's just going to go on a roll. And there's no stopping that. So I'm more worried about drawing a red line and showing solidarity with pro-democracy forces than exacerbating Putin's paranoid personality.
So then do you think that your suggestions are being proffered in the White House? I mean, Netanyahu was there today with the president. Is he drawing red lines? He had a 90-minute phone conversation with Putin. And I don't understand what these red lines could be. I mean, it seems to me that this is Russia's sphere of influence. I don't know where we can draw these red lines. So what advice would you give Putin? I mean, Obama?
You need to show sympathy with Russia's concerns. There is a large Russian minority in Ukraine. Crimea has autonomy, which needs to be strengthened. The lease for the naval air station in Sevastopol goes to 2042. That needs to be reaffirmed. So those are positive validations of Russia's concerns. But at the same time, Russia's not going to protect its minority and realize autonomy and get its security by acting the way it does. So you need to make clear what is normative behavior and have the international community acting in consort to let Putin know what the costs are going to be. And the Russian stock market tumbled 13% today. The Russian people don't want to have a war in Ukraine. They certainly don't want to cross swords with NATO. So at what point is Putin just completely out of step with his own oligarchs and his own population? It seems to me that we're fast approaching that point.
Right, but if NATO gets involved, isn't that a reviving a kind of Cold War confrontation? What possible use would that kind of military threat be?
So I'm not suggesting that there be military action. I'm suggesting that NATO show solidarity, that it set up a monitoring mechanism, that it takes steps to deepen the integration of Ukraine into Euro-Atlantic institutions, which include NATO as well as the Eastern European Partnership and Neighborhood Initiative. I mean, there are a lot of tools that the international community can bring to bear to show solidarity with Kiev, to express sympathy with Russia's concerns, but also to be firm and resolute that you can't have this kind of aggression. It breaks down the international system. And if you allow it in one place, then Putin will continue to push the envelope until Russia's aggression is stopped someplace else.
Well, just to my mind, that all of those things would be counterproductive. The only thing that could probably deter Putin would be the fact that he could start a guerrilla war in the Ukraine, and his own people would be revolted by the idea of Russians killing Ukrainians who they have very close ties with. It seems to me that the less saber rattling we do, the better off we are.
So we haven't done very much saber rattling. You know, there are diplomatic initiatives that can be taken, but you know, keep in mind that there is a Muslim Tatar minority in Crimea. There are radical Muslims in Dagestan and Chechnya. If the Muslim minority in Crimea will have their rights taken away from them, what's to say that they themselves don't become radicalized? And then Russia has another front of radical Islam that it has to deal with. Mm-hmm. Putin will stop when he recognizing it's in Russia's interest to stop. You know, we have to make the case why it's in his interest and let him know what the costs are. Some of those costs are to be paid internationally. Other costs are domestic. We just need to make the case and be resolute and strong, because that's the only way that you can deal with tyrants and dictators.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, David Phillips.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with David Phillips, the director of the Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University, and the author of Liberating Kosovo, Coercive Diplomacy and U.S. Intervention. He has worked as a senior advisor to the United Nations Secretariat and as a foreign affairs expert and senior advisor to the United States Department of State. And he has an article at the Huffington Post, Putin's Calculus in Ukraine. We're going to take a brief station break and be back with an analyst of popular culture discussing this year's winners in the Academy Awards.